Right now, we move on. It's time for the Berkshire Edge on Air. You can find the Berkshire Edge at berkshireedge.com, where they are just loaded with stories about the South County area and surrounding areas. And we're joined by David and Marcy every Wednesday live. Good morning, you two.
But I can talk for a minute.
Okay. Aha, Marcy's on the way to the phone.
No, she is on the phone with her doctor right now, so she will be off in a second.
Well, that's okay. Well, we can kick it off with you.
Okay.
Okay, why not, you know?
That'd be good.
Yeah. We'll start off with story number one, and a new director of the Great Barrington Libraries.
Yes, that's right, Samara Klein. She's the daughter. She's a young woman, a daughter of the a friend of ours and a well-known writer, Dan Klein, who writes, who's an excellent writer, actually. And
hello, I'm here.
There's Marcy.
Hello.
Hello.
Anyway, so she takes over. Samara takes over the it's appropriate, you know, that her dad is a really a well-known.
She
writer.
She grew up with books.
She grew up, that's right.
Her mother was a writer. Her father's a writer. She said she grew up with books, and she grew up going to the library. So she's
and going to this library.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is perfect that she is the new library director.
Yeah. In fact, it couldn't be more perfect.
Yes, right. So we're very excited.
A young woman who is really smart. And anyways, it's terrific.
Now, when you say director of the Great Barrington libraries, so there's one director overall of all the libraries?
Yes, yes, that's
okay.
Right.
Well, there are two buildings.
Yes, there are two. One is in Great Barrington, which is downtown, the Mason Library, and then there is the Ramsdale Library in the village of. The village of Housatonic. Housatonic being maintaining a kind of its independent status with its own library, which is quite a charming little neighborhood library. So we have plenty of libraries and plenty of books.
And we love our libraries.
We do.
Well, you know, I think when we look at our libraries around here, and this includes in Massachusetts, New York, and Connecticut, we're all very proud of the heritage of our libraries. And our libraries have maintained their importance with the help now of the Internet, where they still remain a very important social hub of our communities.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And it's great that Samara, who's she's a young woman, she'll be bringing, I think, to the library lots of new ideas too. We'll see what
because
kind
libraries
of programs.
Are really under siege at the moment. I maybe not so much in Great Barrington, but I went to a talk about censorship recently at the Stockbridge Library, and you know, librarians all across the country have been under siege because people want to take certain books off the shelves that they think are dangerous, either for adults or children.
Meanwhile, they want to put dangerous books in the library.
Well, that's an interesting topic because all of our libraries, there's an event coming up at the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon where, once again, it's about children's books, but also in this day and age, when I was younger, banning books and burning books was something when I was very young. We moved away from that in this country to more open thought. And now it encompasses everything from children's books on up, where there's questions unnecessarily, I think, being heaved upon educators and librarians.
Well, yes, we do feel that way. But apparently people in other parts of this country don't. I mean, they find that new ideas are dangerous.
Well, the funny thing, it's
not... ideas that they disagree with are dangerous.
And not necessarily new ideas. Ideas that, when you look back into your history, whether you're a country, whether you're a town, whether you're whatever, you look back into it and you see what was done, what happened in it, and you learn from it and you grow from it. That's why, you know, it's we're in such a precarious time here, and we're lucky around here. I think all our libraries are safe, and they'll be able to do what they do. But that's because we happen to be in a special area.
Right.
Yep. New England has. Yes, that's right. I think New England is kind of special in terms of the rest of the country. You know, we're a little bit more. Traditional,
yeah,
you might say.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, we talked about Great Barrington Libraries, and you mentioned about Housatonic. Well, Housatonic is known for other things other than libraries.
Yeah. We're about to go on to our next article about the Housatonic Waterworks, but in that same article, which talks about the select board, there's a little note that at its last meeting, the library, Select Board approved a one-day beer and wine license to the library trustees so they can have a welcome party on October 7th for Samara Klein, so their new director. So that's very nice. Otherwise, we'll go on to this next article about...
Which is also about Housatonic.
Housatonic, right.
Well, they won't be serving any of the water at the...
They won't be serving any of the water.
I'm sorry.
Interesting, because this is really... I mean, you know, we've talked many times together about the Housatonic Waterworks, and suddenly... We had a big demonstration. I mean, there's now it's getting much more organized, and there was a big demonstration downtown about Housatonic needs clean and safe water. There are lots of people with signs.
We should point out that Housatonic is a village within the town of Great Barrington.
It
maintains its identity very fiercely. And one of its central entities is this Housatonic private water system.
Privately owned.
It doesn't have the tax resources that the town's water system has, and so it struggles to maintain itself.
And the water is foul.
You know, I was wondering how long it would take people to stand up and say, you know what, let's not pay water bills. And it won't be long before people start drilling wells and charging it back to the town. I'm serious. If I lived in that, I'd be doing that. I think they're absolutely within their rights to protest loudly and protest whatever way they can.
Yes.
Well, they are.
We have a picture on the
top of the story with people demonstrating out in front of town hall. And one big banner reads, Housatonic needs clean and safe water. you think in this day and age that there wouldn't have to be a demonstration such as this. But this is a remnant of an old system in which, utilities like water systems and roads used to be privately owned.
Right.
And the Housatonic water system is... Water Works is a remnant of those days.
I love it. It's called Housatonic Water Works. It reminds me of Monopoly. The Water Works. You can buy the Water Works.
Well, what's interesting about this is it all sits here like this, but God forbid something happens where something in that water system causes somebody to get sick and die. Then you're looking back at what happened in Detroit. Then you're looking at people being responsible. So sooner or later, the state has to get together with the town to solve this problem, because it is absolutely unbelievable in this day and age that it's allowed to drag on.
Well, you see, you know, the town of Great Barrington, the greater town, has wonderful water, and it's only this little insular. village that has its own private water system, which the owner has been like a dog in the manger holding on to. I think finally it's going to, I think this is going to come to a head and he's going to have to give it up. But we'll have several more stories about this in the coming weeks, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And it can only get more and more involved by the public being involved. That's what we'll hopefully finally tip the angle on this. Let's move on to Sandersfield because they've been designated now. They've got a national designation.
They do.
Yes.
They are. They've been designated as a National Historic District. There's a village within the town called New Boston. And it's been listed. It's approved for listing on the National Register of Historic Sites.
According to the declaration, it still retains considerable architectural fabric from the mid 18th century to about 1880. Including Federal, Greek Revival, and Gothic Revival styles, and as farms were established throughout Sandersfield, New Boston in the 19th century became the town's commercial center.
And it had three general stores.
It did.
Ooh.
That's
like a shopping mall,
right?
You know, in those days.
several mills, three general stores, several mills, and a variety of shops. And in the 1930s, it was a place for skiing. People flocked there to see professional jumpers perform at Suicide Hill in the heart of the district.
Anyway.
So, and now the New Boston Inn has a restaurant and tavern that offers hospitality to this day. So,
well, you know, we talk about things like this and we laugh a little bit, but you know, when you think about this, think about the black history, black Americans. Think about in Salisbury where they can carry on the tradition of ski jumping to this day. You think about West Cornwall, a tiny little town, one of the smallest towns in Connecticut at one point, had its own butcher shop, had its own village market, you think about the way it used to be. And this goes back to what we were talking about learning from our past. These are all things that we live with, that we cherish.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, it is.
And give character to our communities, you know.
It really is very nice to preserve. I mean, to have a, you know, when I read this little paragraph about the two general stores and and the farms around, it makes me think about what this life was like there, what this town was like. There were farmers, and just like in the movies, they would probably come into town every once in a while to stock up at the general store and to see people. And by preserving these buildings, you get a sense of how people lived in those days, which is, I find very intriguing.
It is. It's like when every 4 years the national ski jumping, the juniors come to our area, and the first year they came, they let what ski jumping? Well, every town around here had a ski jump.
Right.
Back then, every town had multiple general stores and places where people gathered and talked and protested and did all this. I mean, that's part of the history that's entwined with us that people who move here should find out about and learn about.
Yes, and it was before radio and television and internet. where people had to come together to communicate.
And they still do. I know of some villages in Vermont where they meet at the general store.
Yeah.
And they called. I know one town that I lived in Arlington, Vermont. The people would come to the general store in the morning, and they called themselves Knights of the Round Table.
That's right.
And they met and they would, discuss the day's events.
Yeah.
And chew over what was going on in the town.
Yep, Absolutely.
And it's a wonderful tradition, actually.
Part of our heritage. We're going to move on here because a candlelight vigil was held in front of the South County Recovery Center.
Oh, yeah. This is a candlelight vigil for South County Recovery Center to remember those who were lost to drug overdoses and to call attention to drug addiction, which is, it was called the little ceremony was called Smash the Stigma, and it was sponsored by the South County Rural Recovery Center, but it was quite a moving ceremony, actually.
South County Recovery Center?
Yes.
Is it rural? South County
the
Recovery
Rural Recovery Center.
Center. Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah. And so it's dedicated. It was a moving ceremony to just remind people of the scourge of drug addiction.
Mm.
You know,
according to the director of this center, more than 374 people in Berkshire County have died due to overdoses since 2010.
And those numbers are the same here in Northwest Connecticut. We're out in the middle of nowhere, and yet these numbers are, when you look at them, are staggering. Staggering.
It is, you know, and you tend to forget that in this rural area that there is this menace of drug addiction and drug dealing and so on.
And many of it began with legal prescriptions.
Well, that's the whole thing. Everything was heightened by oxycodone, and it went from there. But it's an amazing problem that is as ever present in our small communities as it is in the large communities. I want to move on to your next story because I think it's great. It involves with recognizing and learning about the indigenous people from our areas.
Right.
Oh yes, this is OLLI, which is
Osher
Lifelong Learning Institute, which is quite an interesting organization that holds these seminars, and this one.
It offers courses.
Yes.
All over the county on interesting subjects. It's mostly for people who, retired people or older people, but not necessarily anybody can go. It's lifelong learning. So,
right.
Very.
And this one was on Indigenous peoples of the Northeast.
Now, I also want to point out, David doesn't know about this yet because I've been dealing with them for advertising, but there's another organization, the name of which I do not remember at the moment, but they're going to have an event on Columbus Day weekend, which they're no longer calling Columbus Day, of course. They're calling Indigenous Peoples Day. So on Sunday, Sunday of that weekend, I think it's October 10th or something like that, October 9th, there will be a big event with Native Americans at the Mahewi, and then there will also be another gathering to honor the Native Americans in this area. So I am. I wish that I had more. Let me just see. It's called. The organization is called the Alliance for a Viable Future. But they are doing, as I said, they're really celebrating Indigenous Peoples Day.
All right. We only have about 2 minutes.
Saturday, October 10th. Saturday, October 8th, honoring Native America, will be at the Mahewi. And then there will be a walk on Monday, October 10th, a ceremonial walk down Main Street for Indigenous Peoples Day.
All right. We only have about a minute left. I want to get on to Carol Owens' story because this is, once again, hot button topic.
Oh, yeah. Residential tax exemption. This is a hot button topic with in this area because of so many people who have second homes.
Right.
And so Carol writes, Carol Owens, one of our columnists, has written a kind of explanation of what is called the residential tax exemption. She's actually pointing out something that is a social phenomenon in this area where so many people have second homes here.
And what is that? The town of Stockbridge is discussing the possibility of lowering taxes for full-time residents and raising taxes for second homeowners. And the town is really split on it, especially since Stockbridge has 60% second homeowners. I mean, 60% of the property in Stockbridge is owned by second homeowners, and you know, who feel very much a part of the community because they've been coming up for years and years. They're not necessarily newcomers. And so this is a very unpleasant subject. Carol, who is in favor of this residential tax exemption, is still asking, you know, for civility in the discussion. When she's, you know, she is talking about the fact that, you know, she doesn't want this to tear up the town.
Yeah. Well, what they're going through now, every town is going to be going through in our area.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the canary in the coal mine, and it's already started in Armenia. It will find its way into every town, simply because that's the way life is now in our area. That's the way life is. Guess what? We're out of time, guys.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Well, that shows you. We just covered a few of the stories you'll find at theberkshireage.com.
Yes,
so we could go on and on.
That's exactly right. But you'll find them, of course, on the web at theberkshireage.com. Guys, we will speak to you next week.
Okay, Marshall.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
TheBerkshireEdge.com is where you'll find them on the Internet.